When UBS pays a $50 million fine, Bank of America pays a $404 million fine, and JP Morgan Chase pays a $13 billion fine, all for defrauding the American public and our government for over 10 years by stealing people's homes and selling bad mortgages. And now Goldman Sachs has agreed to pay $550 million for its handling in its crooked affairs. But that's not the worst of it, folks. Johnson & Johnson, corporate giant Johnson & Johnson, has agreed to pay $2 billion for paying off doctors and pharmacies to give old people and babies drugs that didn't work and could hurt them. So how many old people and babies died for that $2 billion? I don't know, but it's clear there's a different justice system for you and I and the rest of America. Because if it's you and me, our children can be arrested for waiting for the bus to go to school. If you didn't know what was happening in this country, I'm Hart Fisher, and I'm about to give you a motherfucking heart attack. Hey guys, if you didn't already know, I'm Hart D. Fisher. With me is the grumpus from hell, Josh Hadley. And we got a very, very special guest with us tonight. To me, he's Johnny G. But to the folks that he helps their lives get a little better every day, he's John E. Pence. But I want to get into a little bit about what I opened the show with. I was watching Comedy Central the other night, and we've been kind of laughing here at Heart Attack because Josh and I have been ahead of the corporate ball for a while. We have been talking all summer long about how there is a different set of justice for corporate America versus our America, which is you and me, human beings that go to jobs and have families to take care of and have wives or husbands to take care of. You know, these are things that we deal with on a daily basis. And I alluded to at the end of that the fact that, well, big bank UBS is going to pay a $50 million fine. Bank of America is going to pay $404 million fine. JP Morgan Chase & Company is going to pay a $13 billion fine. I did not stutter there, guys. That's $13 billion, all for their defrauding of the public, defrauding of the government, for stealing people's homes, for selling bad mortgages. Not one human being is going to go to jail. They're just going to pay a fine. And it doesn't end there. Goldman Sachs is going to pay $550 million for its wrongdoing. But worse than that, folks, the thing that makes me really, truly sick to my stomach is this settlement with Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson is one of the biggest, most trusted names in shampoos, drugs for elderly and drugs for children, drugs for neonatal care. And apparently they're settled with the government to pay $2 billion in fines for bribing doctors and pharmacies to give old people and babies drugs that didn't work. Not only did these drugs not work, but they had health complications. And my question is how many old folks and babies died because of what Johnson & Johnson did? Essentially, they convinced people and bribed doctors in the system to prescribe drugs that kill people, that don't help them, that fucking hurt them. And they're just paying a fine and not one person's going to go to jail. But as Jonathan Stewart pointed out on Comedy Central, three kids were standing at the bus stop waiting for the bus, and the police came up, started harassing them, cuffed them, and arrested these kids. What were they doing? They were just waiting for the bus. Jesus Christ, Josh. What the fuck, man?
Wrong show. We're on Heart Attack. What the fuck is on after this?
Yeah, right, man? I mean, doesn't it just blow your mind? Now, I'm going to go ahead and bring Johnny on, and I'm going to introduce Johnny a little bit after this. How do you guys feel when you hear this kind of stuff?
It's sickening, but I wish I could say it was surprising anymore.
I think it's the way life is. It's just life on life's terms. These guys screwed up when they gave everyone in the world all the technology they wanted and said, give us your money, here's a bunch of technology, and now we have the ability to bust these assholes flat out.
Now, as you can tell by Johnny's language, he's a bit of a salt of the earth. Johnny and I go way the fuck back to, I met Johnny in Champaign, Illinois when I was down there as a bouncer at a bar called Mabel's, and Johnny had a band called Mole Temple, and I got to know John, and John was friends with my my girlfriend, Michelle, and in fact, he knew her before I ever did, and we kind of really got to know each other after she was murdered, and we went through that whole horror show of the murder trial and all the Dahmer controversy stuff happening at the same time. And I'll tell you guys flat out, Johnny's one of the guys who helped me stand up. Johnny helped me survive those times. He was a good friend. And it's funny because all during those days, I never even knew his last fucking name. He was only Johnny G to me. And in town, in Champaign, he was kind of this legendary, you know, ass kicker, room wrecker in this punk band. And, you know, he'd already had some problems with drugs and with heroin. And, you know, we all joked because he was the guy that had gone out with one of the chick from Smashing Pumpkins. And, you know, he was a rock and roll dude. But Johnny's been through a lot in his life. And that's why I'm going to bring him on. This is why I'm bringing him on today. Johnny is working with some charities to help homeless folks and help kids at risk. And Johnny is a kid who's got quite a bit of a story himself. Not only does he help, not only did he clean himself up, get himself off of drugs, not only is he helping other people get off of drugs, but Johnny is a special kind of cat because he's a lunatic. He's a guy who was in a car wreck that nearly killed him, and the doctors all flat out said, you're never going to walk again. And guess what? This fucking crazy motherfucker's still out getting concussions in the hockey rink playing motherfucking hockey. He's a fucking lunatic. So without further ado, folks at Heart Attack, you are about to meet Johnny G. And Josh, what's your first question for Johnny?
Just a little bit of background. I know you've had a traumatic brain injury, John, and my wife has as well, and she's still recovering. She's only in her about fourth year of it. I know how difficult it can be from me looking on from the outside. How difficult was it for you to overcome the TBI that you had to get to the point where you are after your accident?
Well, one thing that helped me the most is I was pissed off most of my life, and every doctor and every nurse that shook their head, gave me a bad prognosis, said you're never going to do this, can't do that, won't do this. I said, watch me. The first surgeon that told me that I would probably never walk again, I told him his ass was the first ass I was going to kick when I was walking out of this hospital. That doctor, about a year and a half later, I sent him a picture of me playing a game of hockey. I said, put this next to your degree, keep practicing medicine. And of course, I told him how grateful I was for his services.
Well, and it also brings up the old joke. Is it a little bit sad that what they do is called practice?
Well, John, you know, what year did you get? You were in a horrific car accident, and I believe the woman that – was it a woman that hit you, and was she texting?
Well, we got to back up. The first accident, I was out on a fairly new bike. It was a beauty, 76 KZ900 Kawasaki. It was a classic, mint condition, and it was a hit and run. I remember a yellow flash. I remember hearing chopper blades. I remember the trauma room. Looking down at a body, and then I remember.
And I'm gonna interrupt Johnny for a minute here, guys at home. Johnny worked as an EMT, which is an emergency technician. That's something that Johnny had done. So he had been the guy scooping people off the sidewalk, and now you find yourself being scooped up off the sidewalk.
Yeah, most of the people that were on the scene, I had done a lot of rescues, motor vehicle accidents, heart attacks, flus. Take someone to the ER for drugs for a decade plus. Most of the people that came to my rescue, we had worked together, and they were friends.
That's horrifying, man. That's absolutely unbelievably horrifying to run up on one of your own splattered on the road like that.
Well, I was 35 feet away in a field, so they had quite the adventure getting me out of the field and up the hill.
Did you go like off? Did they hit you and you were like off the guardrail in a field somewhere, like over a cliff? Or
it was a blind left turn. So this guy was coming up on his left, way into my lane. He hit me basically in the thigh, crushed my left side. I flew into the guardrail, crushed my right side, flipped over the guardrail down a hill, 30, 40 feet down the hill in a field. With grass taller than my body laying there. An off-duty police officer drove past. I don't know if it was 2 minutes later, 20 minutes later. He drove past and saw my bike. He recognized the bike. The bike was infamous. It was a beautiful bike, and it was nicknamed the Dude Magnet. I couldn't drive it anywhere in town without a bunch of dudes swarming the bike, wanting to check it out. And he was
dude magnet.
Always the lucky one, always the bridesmaid. But he recognized the bike, and he knew that there was no way in hell the bike, in the condition it was in, oddly enough, it was leaned up against the guardrail, that it would make it that far and break down or run out of gas. He drove a mile down the road, and for some reason, he just turned around and kind of yelled over the guardrail, took a quick peek, and heard a groan.
Wow.
And that got the ball rolling for 911, and my chopper that I was flying JAFO with actually picked me up on scene. They were a crew that I had flown with many times, and they had to jumpstart me in the helicopter again. I don't know who it was, but I remember a female voice saying, "He's not going to make it to the helicopter," and I didn't know who they were talking about.
How difficult was it for you to get back to a relative normal? How long was the recovery process?
Well, we're at 3.5 years now, and there's still a lot of recovery to go.
And he's had complications in between. He's kind of – when I talk about my buddy Johnny and I describe Johnny to people, I tell them flat out, he's Dennis the Menace grown up. If you want to know about Johnny, he's fucking Dennis the Menace grown up. Trouble finds John. He'll be fucking watching a hockey game with his chick, and a puck will come flying out and smack him in the face.
That was shortly after the accident. Yeah, that was a beauty.
Yeah, after they told you you'd never walk again, you're out there, you're walking, you're playing hockey, and now you're just watching the fucking game with your wife, and the puck smacks you upside the head. It's hilarious,
in the safest,
dude.
In the safest spot in the arena, behind the glass and the net, it was a 1 in a million shot. It hit an I-beam on the ceiling and came straight down, and it split my head and skull open. I just kind of looked at someone, and they're like, "Dude, you're bleeding." And I heard a couple people go, "Hey, they're taking his puck." You know, and it's a hockey rink rule. You get knocked out with a puck, you get the puck.
Fuck yeah.
So I didn't, you know, again, I didn't know who they were talking about. And I'm like, "Hey, give that guy his puck."
Dude, I think he got totally pucked in that situation.
Yeah, puck dude. And then there was another car accident on top of that one. But I want to know, how did they find the guy? I mean, was it a guy, a chick? Who hit you?
I was finally starting to drive again, and hesitant, very hesitant. Still a lot of PTSD, still a lot of not wanting any part of being on anywhere near a vehicle. The red light had changed to green for me. There were 5 to 7 vehicles already stopped at the red light. I start pulling out, and a girl doing at least 40, if not a little more, in a 25, runs the red light on her phone and sends me in my car flying 30 feet down the road. Again, an EMS crew that I ran with for a decade or better came to my aid and got me to the hospital, got me fixed up again. You know, they kept saying, "One more concussion and you're going to be smiling and drooling." And I said, you know, they said that 45 concussions ago. Watch me.
And how many breaks have you had? You and I were comparing breaks, and I immediately gave up.
Well, my son Declan did a little research, and he said, "Daddy, did you know that you had more broken bones than Evel Knievel did in his last wreck? You had more broken bones than his last 2 wrecks, so you're better than Evel Knievel, Dad." And I think it was somewhere around 40, and a lot of the stuff, you know, the rib cage, my hand, my foot, it was crushed, like kind of powdered crushed. And I almost lost 2 toes. I lost a lot of bones in my foot.
Did you literally lose bones, like bones are missing from your foot?
Yeah, I had a couple, you know, I had a chunk of bone fly out of my foot, a piece of it sticking out, and I had 3 surgeries on that foot, and the metal kept cracking the bone, so I pulled the first piece of metal out because, you know, it hurt to walk so I could play a game of hockey because I'm that smart. Then I had another surgery or two. They took the metal out and just they started taking out some of the metatarsals, the bones in the foot, and they took out a few of the bones in the 2 outside toes, and they've shrunk up. Now my remaining 3 toes have spread out to compensate for the balance. It's fascinating what the body can do. So yeah, I'm missing bones.
Ouch. So you're driving around, and still, how did they catch this guy that hit you the first time?
No, they never caught the guy that hit me the first time. I won the lawsuit because, oddly enough, the insurance company lied, but one of them didn't, and sent a letter saying, oh, yeah, you did have coverage. Oops. So we didn't really go after anyone.
So you had a hard time collecting your insurance for this. You had a difficult time.
Yeah, it took over 2 years.
Do you want to name the insurance companies that gave you a difficult time?
No, they have to live with themselves, not me. I couldn't possibly care any less. I don't, the driver.
You don't want to warn other customers out there? Because I know that I want to warn anybody out there, be careful of what cat litter you're buying, because I had an issue with my cat litter that was fucking up my cat. And as soon as I switched up the cat litter, the cat was all better. It had to do with he was getting in his eyes and burning his eyes. And I'll say it, as soon as I changed from Fresh Step to a different cat litter, I didn't have that problem anymore. And I'm going to talk to my manager at my local Vons about it. And the reason I speak up is because I don't want to see anybody else get fucked over or hurt.
Well, I had to change cat litter too a few times, but
the
worst I'm getting now is a little bit of rash on my fingers. That's
fucking bastard. I'm just trying to say, is this an insurance company that anybody would recognize?
Hart is so outside of the mainstream. He doesn't use toilets. He has a litter box.
Well, I'm in Southeast Ohio. My litter box is Southeast Ohio.
About this then? How about we flip it? Why don't we say, who was the good guy insurance agency? Who did right by you?
Well, my attorney called them on their bullshit. The agent for the insurance company said, sorry about your luck, couldn't catch the driver, you weren't really covered for any of this. Someone from the insurance company, my attorney, called and said, hey, can you send a copy of John's policy over? We're just curious. And as a cover letter, he wrote, John was covered for this and this and this, $900,000 for this, $300,000 for this, $900,000 for this, and he hand signed it. So now we've got the agent saying no coverage, didn't have it, and a person representing the actual insurance company saying he was covered to the hilt, he couldn't have had any more insurance. The traumatic brain injury, I don't remember how we stopped going after one charge, and then we went back to they lied, now they're going to pay more. And really, they had no defense other than taking my money, putting it into account, and earning interest off it as long as they possibly could before they had to cough it up. And they knew they had to.
So it's my understanding that an insurance company has a financial incentive to delay payment because they're making money on that. And hence, that might be a particular reason why they wouldn't want to pay somebody right away, huh?
Well, absolutely. The $1 million, they thought, let's hold on to this for a minute and drag this lawsuit out. Now, while I was in the trauma unit, laying in a bed fully immobilized, a woman walked in and said, hi, I represent your insurance company. Here's your $7,000 check for your motorcycle. Get well soon. So we also had that. They had already taken responsibility for the accident and cut me a check for the motorcycle. I get out of the hospital 4 or 5 months later, and the agent's like, oh, no, you weren't covered.
Whoa.
So, was the hospital stay at least covered?
My insurance company was picking up the tab, and they eventually went after the insurance company and got their money. Because of that, what happened in the trauma unit, a nurse walks in one day and says, you have 48 hours left in the trauma unit before you yourself pay. I'm just kind of curious as to how much it was a day for a trauma unit, learning how to read, write, walk, and talk, and pee in a toilet again. And they said, $4,000 or $5,000, it's not that bad. So I said, this is the part where I walk out of the hospital. I had been walking. I was sneaking out of bed, and I was holding on to poles, the IV pole, and I was just kind of putting down through the hallways. And a great story, something that really finally had me smiling and inspired me, was a nurse, a night nurse. And she said, John, you are who you are, and if you're going to keep walking around the hospital, could you please put some underwear on underneath that gown? I started laughing, and I said, well, I could just turn it around, And then I thought, let's do this. Let's keep smiling. Let's do this. Let's work harder. I want out of here. I'm not going to lay in that bed and die. It's just not going to happen. I'm walking out of this hospital. So a few days later, I was transported to Riverside Rehabilitation Hospital in Columbus, and I was just blessed with an amazing physical therapist. She said, we have to teach you how to stand up now. I said, all right, well, help me stand up, and we'll walk around the hospital for a half an hour and work on standing up. She would take me into the physical therapy room to stretch some rubber bands and walk up two wooden steps. And I said, why don't we just walk up three floors and back down, and you hold me. And she was like, oh, my God, you're going to kill yourself, and I'm going to get fired. And I said, that's as bad as it gets. Let's go for it. And she was like, okay. So we went for it. And I pushed, and I pushed, and I pushed. I was not going to lay down and die, not for anybody. I have a beautiful partner. I have beautiful children. I had to get home. You know, my youngest, Declan, was 10 when it happened. And I was going to get home and play with my son. There was no doubt in my mind, not for a minute.
Exactly. This is what we're saying, folks at home. You know, people will poo-poo and they will try to tell you what you can't do. And they'll try to close doors on you. They'll give up on you before you will. But you can make up your own fucking mind and you can make it happen. And now we're about to go to song. I'm Hart Fisher. You're listening to Heart Attack. With me is Josh Hadley and my old friend Johnny Pence. And before we go to song, I'm going to say that guy's got one hell of a cute little ass, because I know I've dried humped it. When he was wearing nothing but a jock strap, a bad wig, cowboy boots, and a cowboy hat on stage at Mabel's. But we'll talk about that when we get back from the song.
And the 45 I had pointed at you.
Cash, I need some fucking cash. I need it kind of fast. I need it now, right away, yeah. Cash, I'm gonna make it last. Don't tell me about the past. I need it now, right away. I need some fucking cash. You need some fucking cash. We all need some fucking
guys just heard Cash from Sugar Ray, and you know what? For the hit song they've got on the air, they're kind of an underrated band. Their first couple albums are a lot more punk rock and roll. And I'll say this, I spent an evening at the Rainbow with the lead singer of that band. What's his name? Mark McGrath or something like that. And you know what? The dude took a ribbing really well. He really fucking took it. I gave it to him, and he fucking had a sense of humor, and he was cool to hang with.
I remember so, when they used to be called the Shrinky Dinks. Is that the same?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, well, John would know. Guys, I'm Hart Fisher. You're listening to Heart Attack, and I've got John E. Pence with me and Josh Hadley. And John knows his fucking punk rock. He was a singer in Mole Temple and a couple other punk rock bands throughout the Midwest. And you fucking know a million punk rock dudes, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, we started in high school, and, you know, we played with SNFU, Toxic Reasons, God, I don't remember, a ton of bands. You know, when you're in Wisconsin, one of the three punk rock bands, you open up for everyone that comes through. Our big break was 1987 when we hooked up with the newly formed Henry Rollins Band right after he left Black Flag. That kind of shot us up, set us out on our own path, and the show, you know, the shows and stuff with Henry. It was just fantastic to the best of my memory.
Because, I mean, I met you through the rock and roll scene in Champaign, Illinois, when I was a bouncer at Mabel's. And we had a lot of shit. We just had a shared vibe. You know, we really clicked right away. And
well, you know, we had a connection. You know, Michelle, her best friend, Christy, was my roommate. Me and Christy and Dirty Bob, who was my bass player, we had a big-ass house. Christy just showed up one day and said, can I crash? Yep. This is my friend Michelle. Can she crash? Yep. So countless times I was putting Christy and Michelle to bed, rub their head for a minute, give them a barf bucket, and we'd go downstairs and jam.
That's cool, man. That's cool. And if you guys didn't know, Michelle was kind of like, you know, one of my first great loves, and unfortunately met to a really fucking shitty, crappy end. John was there to pick me up off my feet with a lot of tough love. This is the asshole. I come back and I need someone to help put like vitamin E oil on my back when I just had got drilled for 5 hours of tattooing on my back. And he's fucking slapping it in. You fucking dick.
Oh, hell.
You remember that, you fucking asshole?
I know you would have done the same. And for the record, Hart, I didn't pick you up. I stood by your side. You're every bit as tough as anyone I've ever met.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate that.
For
folks at home, John is currently doing a lot of work with troubled youth, to put it politely. And John is also working with a charity. I mean, not only did this guy, he's like the human fly. I don't know how many of you guys are 1970s, early 80s Marvel Comics fanatics like I am. And one of my favorite comic book characters is the human fly. And the human fly was like a stunt guy who was paralyzed and he was never supposed to walk again. But from sheer force of will, not only did he walk again, he became the world's greatest stuntman and a superhero, the human fly. And so, Johnny, you're fucking it, man.
Well, I'm no hero, that's for sure. Heroes are the idiots that run into dangerous situations and get hurt. I just wanted to help people. I wanted to do for people what I would have loved to have someone do for me just a few times, you know?
How many years did you work as an emergency medical technician, John?
I was better than a decade. I wanted to make more money, and I wanted to get on that chopper full-time, so I quit EMS, and I went back to college full-time. I was in nursing school. I was almost done, weeks away from finishing nursing school, when I was in the hit and run and woke up in a hospital. The chopper I was working towards flying on revived me from death, dropped me off at a trauma unit, oddly enough.
So you've been dead a couple times then?
Yeah, it's not as bad as you'd think. It's very serene. I had the whole, now I really sound like a crazy guy, up in the corner of a room, looking down at a body on a table, and off to the right, the pretty lights that went, you know, way far away, the serene feeling of feeling nothing. I remember the scrubs around the table, light blue, red and white, probably for the Buckeyes because it was Columbus, Ohio. Dark blue on the other side of the bed had the guy with the gloves, the gown, the face mask. That was probably the emergency room physician, the trauma physician, and they don't like to get dirty. If you want to ruin a good emergency, get a doctor.
It's crazy. My wife talks the same kind of thing, John. You know, she's a cancer survivor, and she was cut open and lying on a surgical table for 9 hours with her guts spread out all over the table. And she talks to me about similar to what you're talking about. Same kind of thing.
Yeah, Waka is an amazing woman. I love your wife. Just from the talks we've had and the computer back and forth, she's an amazingly, amazingly strong woman. A lot of fight in that woman. And obviously strong because she babysits you like my partner has to do to me.
I can't handle dumb chicks. I can't handle the dumb Marilyn Monroe. I like a fucking strong, challenging, kick-ass woman. I want a woman. Don't give me a little fucking girl. I want a woman. And that's why I got the woman I got, who people think like, oh, you went and got yourself a little Jap because you got yourself a little Asian princess. And it's like, no, you don't even fucking know, man. Still waters run fucking deep. You don't even know how
tough. That's the thing with my partner, Tracy, what society would call hot and smoking hot and beautiful. She's one of the most beautiful women in the Tri-County area. She's stunning to look at. And
if you're cute little ass, Johnny, I would expect nothing less.
Yeah, but I wouldn't fuck with her, and I really try not to. She's really helped me grow up and watch my P's and Q's a little bit. She's a fantastic partner. Don't let the pretty face fool you, though.
Yeah, it's good to have a good, strong woman in your life. John, before you had the good, strong woman in your life, we've been talking about your desire to help people. And we're going to get into this charity that you work with, but I'm kind of curious. I already know, but I want my audience to know, because we talk a lot about pulling yourself up off the ground. There's a lot of people listening that are destroyed. There's a lot of people out there in the audience right now that are hurting, that are in a lot of trouble, and they're listening to Heart Attack because I've been through stuff like this. You've been through stuff like this. Josh is going through stuff, and it's because we kind of talk about it for really real, not in a PC way, and we've been there and we've come back from it. Some of your background is pretty harrowing. What is it about, like, what has happened to you in your life, especially with some of your childhood? Why do you want to turn around and help people? I mean, what happened to you? What's the deal?
Well, you know, my grandfather, he played for the Green Bay Packers in 1939, and he did not play for Vince Lombardi. He played for Earl Curley Lambeau that made Vince Lombardi look like a kitty cat. And then he gave up his spot on the Green Bay Packers after one more year of pro football to go back to college with the Navy and fly Hellcats in World War II. He flew the Panama Canal sinking subs, and then he was training to go out and went out and finished up in the Pacific to clean up out there. He became, he got home, and typical Italian, 95 children. He was an assistant principal at West High School Green Bay, and he was a coach of the track team and the football team. And, you know, we're talking in the 50s and the 60s, and he still has state records today. And, you know, you mention his name, and people go, that was my principal. That guy was my coach, this, that, and the other thing. There's a guy named Pat up in Door County where I grew up. He put out a few albums. He's a great musician, Pat McDonald. The future's so bright, he's got to wear shades. We were talking not too long ago, and he read something. I said something about my grandfather, and he's like, oh, my God, yeah, he almost threw me out of high school. But he gave me another chance respectfully, and he talked to me like a human, not a punk-ass kid. And he, you know, my grandpa was the type of person that said, be the man you know you are.
And I would like to interject. I live in Door County, and I spend a lot of time in Green Bay, so John and I are technically from the same area, even though we've never met in person.
You might have even recognized your skinny little scrawny ass from your past, except that new Josh ate old Josh.
Nah, nah, nah.
Well, hey, you know, if you want to drop 60 pounds, just get run over by a couple cars, Bell's palsy, and knocked out by a puck. I dropped 63, so, you know, that's one way.
We get the history lesson of your grandpa, but I think people need to know that, dude, you went through some heavy fucking shit growing up.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that. You know, it's the typical American dream. You know, mental abuse, physical abuse was there. This, that, and the other thing. It's
guys, he's glossing over. Let me tell you folks at home, John has a person who comes from a background of neglect, dad not being, worse than not being there, serious, like, fucking ass beatings. He hasn't even gotten into who his father was as a professional hockey-playing animal all around the world. John has really seen the other side of hell, and that's part of why I think it's important for people to know that you can come from a background of abuse and remake yourself, John. That's the only reason I've asked you to talk about some of this, because I know that there are kids out there. We have a very young audience. I know there's kids out there right now that are getting the shit beat out of them by their dad or their mom or somebody in their life, and I think it's important for them to know that other people like us have been through this. And you can get through this, and you could become something else. And that's the only reason I'm asking you to talk about this, John. It's the only reason.
It was hell, and hell is hell. Everyone knows what everyone knows what abuse is and what it does to a person.
They don't know, and I think that's part of the problem we have in this country is we're not looking at the real issues and the real problems, and even looking in the mirror at what we do to the people in our own lives. You talk about the respect you have for your wife. And you broke a cycle of violence, man. That's major right there.
When you're in that situation and it's your parents or your parents' friends or a sibling, you think it's normal. You think that's just what life is. And you get to a certain age and it's no longer explanations.
Because
that's excuses.
That's what it was for me. You know, I grew up and I can count on my hand more than one finger. I've seen fathers beat up my buddy in front of me. And that wasn't strange or weird. It was just my life. And I never thought it was strange until I went to college.
Yeah, I remember when a friend of mine got knocked in the side of the head and his glasses went flying by his father, who was a cop, a fucking pig. And, you know, he thought it was okay just to knock his son out, but go out there and polish his badge and, you know, do what he had to do. And I kind of giggled, and he looked at me as if he was going to pop me, and he knew I would pop him back. I was giggling because it wasn't me for a change. And I knew that he'd split, go get drunk, go be a pig somewhere, and I would take care of my buddy. But at some point, you know, you got to blow the candles out on your pity party cake and be the man or woman you know you can be and deserve to be. It's possible. I went through hell. I died. I saw it. I saw heaven. Came back. I beat all the odds. And I'll tell you who was there for me. It wasn't the government, who cannot in any way, shape, or form be counted on. They're humans like we are. They lie, cheat, and steal. Some of the biggest pigs in the country. I still haven't gotten any help from the government. People that helped me the most were people that had the least to give. Some people would come over, help me clean up and shower, help me get to the bathroom and back, bring me a meal. People with nothing to give were giving the most because they would just come over and just sit with me. Because sitting, you know, fairly immobilized on a couch for a few months after going through what I went through, I was going insane. I was losing it. And to just have someone come and sit with me for 10 minutes, 5 minutes, a half an hour, and talk and say, you know, you're Johnny G, I know you're going to beat this. High fives, see you in a week, buddy. Those are the people that were the abused ones, the drug addicts, the drunks that are in recovery, that are working hard to be the people they know they can be. They're the ones that go out of their way to help people. So if you're feeling down, if you're feeling like a piece of crap, get off your ass and go do something nice for someone else, and you'll feel good.
It's the truth, John. It's the truth. When I was going through hell with Waka's cancer and I was down at the bottom of my rung, I got to tell you, it was the people of Highland Park that took me in. It was the fucking gangbanging kids, the tagger kids, the fucking youth of Highland Park really picked me up when I was at the bottom of the barrel. And that's part of why I've gotten involved in some of the politics in Highland Park. And it's part of why I've gotten involved with, like, fighting the idea of, you're going to put a park in my neighborhood that's filled with toxic chemicals and kids are going to get cancer and you're going to pat yourself on the back about it? Not on my watch, you fucking son of a bitch. And it's because we're fueled by fire. They don't even understand. We're fueled by fire.
And now we're fueled with the technology. They said, give us all your money and you can have these pretty shiny toys. And now we're aiming them at them and they're getting busted left and right.
They're afraid, man. They're, you know, very afraid.
The world is starting to figure out that they're no better or no worse than anyone else. You guys want to spy on me? You guys want to fuck with me? Knock on the door. I'll let you in. You can have my crap, but you're going to look me in the eyes and we're going to have it out. And we're going to come to the conclusion that someone's either not going to have their teeth or we're going to have a handshake at the end. And the reality of them just being human is going to hit them.
And if that doesn't hit them, you fucking will. And that's America for you, folks. We're going to go to commercial when we come back. Well, John, go ahead and say what you had to say.
You know, I've never started a fight and I've never turned one down.
That's right, man. That's a big part of it is you don't go looking for it. You're not a bully. But if it comes knocking on your door, motherfucker, they're going to find one. On that note, we're going to commercial. I'm Hart Fisher. You're listening to Heart Attack. We'll be right back.
Hey, you guys, Hart D. Fisher here from Heart Attack. And guess what? It's time for a Hydra Blue spot. That's right. We're going to promote some Hydra Blue. Why? Because it's some really kick-ass water. You want to know how I make it through my crazy workload and my crazy partying schedule? I got one word for you. Actually, two. Hydra Blue. If you use the coupon code word horror, you're going to get 15% off your order. That's right. Use the coupon code word horror at HydraBlue.com today, and you will get 15% off your order. Now remember, guys, this is stuff that I pay for out of my own pocket. I actually am a customer, and I have enjoyed this water. It's fantastic, tastes great, keeps me energized and hydrated. I just love it. So go to Hydra Blue and get your water today. But you know what? It's not always about selling stuff here at Heart Attack. Sometimes you just want to promote something cool, like Eddie Brandt's Saturday Matinee. It's a really kick-ass VHS store. What? Did I say VHS store? Yes, I did. It's a VHS store in the heart of North Hollywood, California. They're located at 5006 Vineland Avenue, but it's not just for the locals. You can order some of those killer movies you see on American Horrors online at www.ebsmvideo.com. That's www.ebsmvideo.com. Check it out today and tell them Hart sent ya.
Heart Attack. Of course, I'm Hart Fisher. With me is Josh Hadley, the Silent One, and my old friend John E. Pence, lead singer of Mold Temple and once upon a time a band called Dresden, also a living miracle who was never supposed to walk again, but he fucking did, because he does what he wants to do, not what they tell him to do. And the thing that I'm really interested in now is, John, you picked yourself up off many multiple wrecks, including some chick who was busy on her fucking phone and couldn't be even bothered to notice that there's a stoplight, rear-ended you, sended you 30 feet in. This is after you already came back from the grave. Now you're helping people out that are in need. Tell me a little bit about this charity project that you're working on. I've done a little bit with the Care Devils thing, but I don't quite understand what Care Devils is myself. So that's Care Devils, folks at home.
Care Devils. You know, with the motorbikes, the skydiving, the hockey, the complete adrenaline junkie, the rock and
Macho
roll.
Man. Macho Man.
The comic book character that Hart so fondly made me.
Oh, that's right. That if people don't know, Johnny G is Howard Stern's limo driver in the comic book Howard Stern versus Rush Limbaugh.
It's a highly recommended purchase from Hart Fisher. What's the
it's
rumpus?
Pretty funny.
Sweet tits. It's my favorite line. So I lose 60 pounds in 2 years of recovering from a hit and run, T-boned by a woman, Bell's palsy, cracked my head open at a hockey game. I recover from all this. I can't fit into anything. So I start giving my clothes away to guys at the recovery house, to the homeless shelter. I just was driving around a box or two at a time saying, here. And it felt really good. And the more I started recovering, still not able to work or get around too well, I started getting to know the homeless. I started to getting to know the people in recovery, the people in the homeless shelters, the families. And then I got my beautiful partner, Tracy, involved in, you know, cleaning out her closet. And we have a two houses for women to recover, one from drugs and alcohol and one from abuse. Tracy's idea was to give away her stuff to them so that when they got out of these places, they had nice clothes to wear, a few bucks in their pocket, and a chance, you know? And then there was a doctor who's a very good friend of mine, and I started recovering at three times the speed anyone ever thought I would. But, you know, the hockey's gone, the skydiving's gone, all the adrenaline stuff is gone with all the metal rods and the pins and too many broken bones. Can't do it anymore. So,
John, would you say some of that behavior was running away from some of the demons inside?
Absolutely. I was always one step ahead of my head. I could not sit still for 15 minutes alone because it was me in my head.
Because when you're alone is when you're left to yourself. That's what got me. Whenever I was alone, I had to be manic. I had to be moving. I had to be working. I had to have a project. And I was running away from the things that were driving me.
Exactly. You know, staying one step ahead of myself. I had an idea of what kind of person I wanted to be, who I thought I could be, where I could set the bar, what kind of family I came from. But I was always afraid of it because of what I was always told. And I hit an age where I just said, screw that. But I kept up the adrenaline rushes, and I called it therapy. I was scraping knees on the asphalt on old vintage motorcycles racing, and I was jumping out of airplanes from 14,000 feet, and it was, I called it therapy to relax and have a little fun. Looking back, you know, it was all suicidal therapy.
Dude, I did the same thing. First time I ever flew in a plane was a single-engine Cessna back in those days, and this is before Michelle was even killed, and I was up partying all night, drinking my ass off, fooling around with some fucking chick from Mabel's all night. Remember that cock cheese chick? Oh, my God. I was drunk through the whole prep and almost died on my first skydive. And the jump master, like, that's the craziest guy who's ever jumped out of my fucking plane. But it was just keeping myself busy and occupied instead of dealing with what was going on inside of me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I wished and prayed and wanted so desperately for decades to be able to sit down for 10 minutes. I just wanted to be able to sit down for 10 minutes comfortably and read a paragraph and not have 5,000 thoughts and have no idea what I just read. I never watched a whole TV show. I had to jump up. I had to go hang with Hart at Mabel's. I had to get the band together and get a rehearsal. I had to play 6 games of hockey a week, not 2.
And poetry, by the way, he's a poet, folks. That's the other part we kind of bonded over, is that's around the time that I met Johnny is when I first was writing poetry.
Yeah, I had someone nudge me and say this stuff was pretty good. Why don't you throw one out there, and I won some contest, and it went to the national contest, won that, and of course, you know, that was when I was still drinking. And for the record, my problem with heroin was I only did it twice and knew that it killed people, so I had to love it and avoid it for the rest of my life. But I did, in fact, nearly drink my brains out.
We shared that one. I kind of avoided the heroin. I to me, that was like a line where I kind of knew in my despair that there were certain things that were going to be a sinkhole. And to me, heroin was one of them.
Well, when I looked back a couple days later and realized that I had tried cocaine and done heroin two little lines in a couple days, I thought, okay, I'm either going to go straight to hell. Because I'm an addict. I'm an alcoholic. I don't just do a little bit on the weekends. I do it. Mm-hmm. I go all the way. With everything, I go all the way or I don't bother. So that kind of gets into recovery. I was in recovery. I was sober for a few years and in nursing school when all this accident stuff happened. And, you know, like I said, the people that had the least to give gave me the most. I wanted to give it back. This doctor says, I've never seen someone as crazy I've never seen the craziest daredevil I've ever met in my life turn into such a care devil. And care devil just stuck. I was bringing, you know, what little food I could get my hands on. I was bringing it to the homeless shelter and sharing. What, you know, what I could put in a bag, I would bring that clothing to the men's recovery house and say, when you get out of here, if this fits, now you got a nice shirt or whatever, you know? And then, you know, Tracy, my partner, jumped in. God bless that beautiful woman's heart. She said, let's get this thing rocking. So now we're holding community awareness events. You know, hey, what the hell are you waiting for? You want to get help or help someone or see someone get help, do it. What are you waiting for? We bring food to anyone that needs food. We give as much clothing away as we can, especially this time of the year. I finished college online. I didn't become a nurse. I became a chemical dependency counselor. And I am working with inner city youth under the age of 18 that had it 5 times harder than I did growing up. Some of them are very dangerous. Some of them are very touchy. Some of them just can't wait for someone to high-five them and say, man, I was there. I love you. You're going to be okay. We're going to do this together. You're going to be good.
That goes a long way, man. That common human touch goes a long way. And being at the bottom of your barrel and just a little act of human kindness, when you're beaten up and you feel so worthless that you can't even believe someone would fucking give you a French fry, let alone the shirt off their back, it kind of blows your mind. And I know that a lot of damaged people, we feel better by helping other people, because when you help other people, you help yourself. And
for
right
sure,
now,
it's selfish.
It is a selfish act. No, I'm helping other people because I want to, because I feel good when I do it. It's not altruistic. I gotta admit it. You know, I'm doing this for selfish reasons. It makes me feel good when I help people, and that's why I do it. I have been through the mill, and so when you've got something like Care Devils and folks, you know, we're living through some really scary times in this country. You watch the television and you'd never know that we're at war with two different countries. They say the Iraq war is over, but it's not. Our troops aren't back. They're there. And we're dealing with the damage that have been done to our troops from these wars and these multiple deployments. And our police forces are completely understaffed and undermanned and undertrained. And our social services are completely overwhelmed and completely being cut by rich people in office that don't understand the common man. And we have national disasters all over this country with homes burning, tidal waves coming in. I mean, it's almost biblical. There's a lot of families and people out there that are good, normal people that should have jobs and should have homes, and now they're bewildered
and
they're locked.
They want them. They're not lazy. They're not leeches.
No. There's a disconnect. There's a real disconnect.
We have a real, real soft spot in our heart for the people that lost a job. Now only one's working, and they're downsizing, eating less, going out less, selling one of the vehicles, pawning this, pawning that, and it gets to the point where they got rid of the TV and the PlayStation. Now they're down to the kids' stuff. We aim at them a lot. Southeast Ohio, we're in one of the – we are in – I think the second poorest county in the state.
Care Devils helps get food and helps bring clothing to families in need and homeless people?
Well, our motto is what we can, when we can, for whomever we can, 24/7.
And Ohio is a state that's really hard hit. Most of the Midwest has been dealing with a lot of major financial issues, and there's real people in need. And, you know, as Americans, we got to look out for each other. And that's something was forgotten.
As Americans, if you're going to wait and hope for the government or a state service to take care of you, that's all you're going to do is wait and hope. And you might get 50, you might get 200 bucks a month. And if you're really lucky and you play the game for a year or two, they might give you a shit box to live in with a little bit of food every day, and you might be able to afford cable. What are you waiting for? That? Really?
Yeah, and we can do it. You know, we can get off our feet, we can get off our asses, and we can get active in our cultures, in our societies, in our local communities. And that's what this is about, is each other taking care of each other. And when I watch corporate television, I don't see that. I see exploitation, buy, sell, and ignoring what's happening in our country. There is over, I believe it's 46 to 48 million people are listed on the poverty line, and there are 1 million children in our schools that don't have anything to eat but the school lunch. We have to look ourselves in the eye, and we have to really get down to brass tacks and start dealing with each other and dealing with ourselves.
You know, I remember the day that I saw a young man who I knew he was working his way to homeless, and I saw him out in front of a building uptown, and I knew that he was kind of searching the area for cigarette butts, and he was across the street from the gas station. I just stopped my truck, I walked across the street, and I said, "Dude, do you have any money?" I said, "Here's $10, and I just turned my back and walked away. He didn't know what to say. Now, I don't know if he went and got drunk, don't know if he went and got a pack of cigarettes, I don't care. I did something for that young man that no one else wanted to do because of the way he looked and what he had done a few times in his life, and no one knew where he came from. They just judged him. And he's a great young man, and every time I see him in town now, I get a high five or a hug. He got a Caredevil shirt, and he's out putting his hand on people's shoulders and saying, "Come on, man, let's go get a bite to eat. It's not going to be much, but I'm going to share."
That's what it's all about, guys. That's really what it's all about. John, where can people get involved? Where can they find you?
Well, you can email caredevils@yahoo.com. We have www.caredevils.com. The website's a little funky right now. You can find Caredevils on Facebook. Probably the best way right now is Caredevils on Facebook, or send me an email, caredevils@yahoo.com. It's not something that Tracy and I are running. It's something that... Oh, and another thing we do is we put together daily care packets. We went to 40 different buildings in this town that talk about free meals here, free-to-income contingent help here, how to get on the bus, how to get a ride to your counseling appointment. We put all this information that you would have to go to 20, 30 buildings to get in a packet. We go to Kinko's, we make 10, 12 at a time, we hand them out, and we give them a care package with an emergency blanket, a flashlight, toilet paper, a couple of protein bars, bottle of water, and we say, "Here, this will get you through one day. This packet will get you through every day. When you're done with it, when you're on your feet, pay it forward."
That's awesome, man. That's really great that you're doing that with your time.
Yeah, I love it. I'm addicted.
That's the way we got to be, folks. We got to look out for each other. And on that note, we've reached the end of another Heart Attack. John, thanks for coming on. I love you, you motherfucker. Josh.
I love you, my old buddy. You're a brother.
Josh, you cranky bastard. Thanks for doing the show. And, you know, you guys at home, you don't always hear Josh talk, but he might be one of the hardest working guys at Heart Attack. Go to our online store. Go to AmericanHorrors.com/store. Go to the 1201beyond.com site. Check it out. We've got t-shirts. This is how you could support us so we can continue doing this radio show. Buy the shirts. We've got American Horror shirts, and we're getting ready to do the Heart Attack shirts. And guess what? We've even got motherfucking Christmas cards. That's right. Official American Horrors Christmas cards are available for a limited time only. So thank you. Stay safe.
Is she really going out with him? I got a feeling inside.
Heart Attack is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.